This article is a article from the Reformed Presbyterian, Volume 2, published in June of 1838, entitled The Covenanters in 1679. Of the 28 years persecution endured under the tyranny of the second Charles and his infatuated successor James, the year 1679 was one of the most trying to the Scottish Covenanters. For 17 years preceding this, they had suffered almost intolerable tyranny, oppression, and violence. Their ministers were driven from their pulpits and their flocks in hundreds. Many of them went into exile. Others wandered through the unfrequented parts of the country, where they might find refuge from their enemies in the morasses and ravines of the moorlands. The blood of the unoffending Covenanters had flowed freely on the scaffold and on the high places of the field, because they preferred obedience to the law of God and the preservation of a good conscience to the will of a despotic government. From the year 1679 till 1688, when the persecution was ended by the revolution which drove their persecutors from power, the Covenanters suffered an increased and unmitigated persecution, sufferings equaled perhaps, but not surpassed, by those of the primitive Christians inflicted by pagan Rome, or of Protestants by papal Rome. The ministers of religion, having been forced from their charges and the people forbidden to hear them preach, and a price put on their heads, it became necessary to hold their meetings for worship in private houses and in retired places in the open fields, where these were frequently held during the darkness of night and often amid the howlings of the storm, in hopes of more effectually avoiding the observation of their enemies. Such meetings, though held simply for the purpose of preaching the gospel and worshiping God, which they could not otherwise enjoy, were branded by those in power as unlawful and seditious assemblies, and in court style were called conventicles. The year 1639 was ushered in by the adoption of a cruel and rigorous system designed for the suppression of all such meetings. The west of Scotland was overrun by hordes of military, who, under pretense of maintaining order, committed the most wanton outrages upon the persons and property of the peaceable inhabitants. Robbery and slaughter were the everyday sport of these publicly authorized marauders. Quote, "In the beginning of this year," says Woodrow, one of the most faithful historians, "the council came to give orders about the forces levied formerly. One part of them they gave leave to ramble up and down the country and harass as did not fully join in conformity with the episcopal incumbents, and to lift the cess, which a great many did not pay till they were forced to it. And others of them they placed in garrisons, the largest of which was in Lanark for some time, another was at Ayr, a third at Kirkcudbright, a fourth at Dumfries, and a good number were posted at Glasgow. Their orders were to pursue and search for such who haunted field meetings, to kill all who resisted them, and to imprison and deliver to magistrates, or to send into the council all whom they apprehended. Those garrisons proved very uneasy to such as clave to the gospel preached by Presbyterian ministers, and many outrages were committed up and down the country by the soldiers. Instances might be given in multitudes." Unquote. Quote, "The Lords of all His Majesty's Privy Council do hereby give express order and command to all officers and soldiers of His Majesty's standing forces, or of the militia, or any part thereof, to dissipate the persons who shall be found by them at conventicles by force of arms, and if they shall refuse to dissolve, being required to do so in the King's name, or shall make resistance, and that, though mutilation or death shall ensue, the said lords do hereby indemnify them from any such slaughter or mutilation, and declare that they shall never be questioned either criminally or civilly for the same in all time coming." Unquote. Thus, quiet and unoffending citizens were prohibited from enjoying the gospel, and if they chose, as the Covenanters did, to obey God rather than this wicked mandate, they were delivered over to the tender mercies of a fierce or bloody soldiery, which carried out to the utmost the sanguinary designs of the court. Quote, "Under color of searching for outlaws, the most atrocious deeds were committed in almost every dwelling. The intercommune persons who fell into their hands were used with the greatest cruelty and thrown into prison. Banishment either to the baths or to the plantations proved a summary method of getting rid of many of the obnoxious Whigs. Oaths were tendered to shepherds and laborers, obliging them to say whether they had seen or heard of any conventicles in their neighborhood. The produce of the ground was deliberately destroyed, and many years' labor of the industrious and unoffending peasantry wantonly committed to the flames. Such were the means employed to make converts to prelacy. Thus robbed of their dearest rights, denied the privileges of worshiping God as He has appointed in His word, quote, oppressed, persecuted, and hunted down in every quarter, the Covenanters were compelled to unite their meetings and assemble for public worship in numbers sufficient to withstand an assault from the military." Unquote. The Covenanters carried arms with them to their meetings. Watches were set to give the alarm if the enemy should come upon them. Armed men were stationed around their congregations when met to defend them in case of attack. Quote, "The warlike attitude which these meetings now assumed, though the Covenanters acted strictly on the defensive, has been condemned by many writers in terms almost most unsparing. But was it a crime, we would ask, to refuse to abandon their religion at the mandate of an atheistical junto who were not fit for governing even a colony of felons? Were they to blame for attending public worship in fields or on mountains when their persecutors had closed every door against them? Or does their guilt consist in submitting to be butchered in cold blood by a brutal soldiery? No, quote, but they should not have defended themselves with carnal weapons, unquote. Then they must either have embraced prelacy, or consented to be put to death, or banished to the plantations, as their persecutors, in the plenitude of their power, thought proper. But they did neither. And it is well for us at the present day that they were endowed with another spirit. They never would have lifted a weapon against their tormentors had they not been forced to do so in their own defense. And neither the law of God nor of nature prohibits self-preservation. For the same command that forbids the taking away of another's life enjoins all lawful endeavors to preserve our own. If they were to be blamed for repelling the assaults of the savage military, so may the Protestants of Germany, who entered into the League of Smalkald, and the lords of the congregation in Scotland at the period of the Reformation, unquote." That from History of the Covenanters, Volume 1, page 339 and page 340. The author of the Memoirs of the Church of Scotland says that, quote, "The Presbyterians suffered extremities that tongue cannot describe, and which heart can hardly conceive of, from the dismal circumstances of hunger, nakedness, etc., lying in damp caves and in hollow clefts of the naked rocks, without shelter, covering, fire, or food. None durst harbor, entertain, relieve, or speak to them upon pain of death," unquote. Such was the state of things in 1679, when the Scottish Covenanters met armed for the purpose of enjoying the ministrations of the gospel. On the 1st of June, in a large meeting of Covenanters was to be held at Loudon Hill. This having been learned by the bloody Graham of Claverhouse, who surprised the Reverend Mr. King and a number of unarmed people who were waiting in Hamilton with the view of attending the meeting the next day. Loudon Hill is about 12 miles distant from Hamilton, situated in the middle of a sequestered and rugged country. Hither, Claverhouse resorted to proceed, and tying his prisoners two and two together, he marched early on the Sabbath morning, driving them before him like so many sheep. Worship had commenced when the congregation was informed of the approach of Claverhouse. The combat was short. In a few minutes, the soldiers were defeated and the prisoners rescued. Claverhouse narrowly escaped. 30 of his men were killed, a number were taken prisoners, who were disarmed and dismissed. The Covenanters lost only two or three, and had only a few wounded. The number of armed Covenanters was immediately increased, but they were lamentably divided as to the most proper course to be pursued. The Covenanters numbering about 5,000, and the Royal Army consisting of 10,000 men, under the command of the Duke of Monmouth, met at Bothwell Bridge on the 22nd of June. The Covenanters possessed themselves of the bridge, and the party who guarded it maintained their ground with great bravery for upwards of 2 hours, during which time the Duke's forces were twice repulsed and even driven from their cannon, which would have been seized by the party had they been suitably supported. At length, their ammunition failing and left unsupported, they fell back upon the main body, which, divided and distracted as it was, became an easy prey to the enemy. 400 Covenanters were slain, and 1,200 made prisoners. The sufferings of the Covenanters were fearfully increased by this unsuccessful attempt. The following lines from the Poetic Mirror holds up to the gaze of an indignant world the monster who was the chief instrument in inflicting these sufferings. "There, worthy of his masters, came the despot's champion, Bloody Graham, to stain for aye a warrior's sword, and lead a fierce through fawning horde, the human bloodhounds of the earth, to hunt the peasant from his hearth. Tyrants, could not misfortune teach that man has rights beyond your reach? Though ye the torture, that thought ye the torture and the stake, could that intrepid spirit break, which even in woman's breast withstood the terrors of the fire and flood?"
Stillwater's Revival Books is now located at PuritanDownloads.com. It's your worldwide online Reformation home for the very best in free and discounted classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, MP3s, and videos. For much more information on the Puritans and Reformers, including the best free and discounted classic and contemporary books, MP3s, digital downloads, and videos, please visit Stillwaters Revival Books at PuritanDownloads.com. Stillwaters Revival Books also publishes the Puritan Hard Drive, the most powerful and practical Christian study tool ever produced. All thanks and glory be to the mercy, grace, and love of the Lord Jesus Christ for this remarkable and wonderful new Christian study tool. The Puritan Hard Drive contains over 12,500 of the best Reformation books, MP3s, and videos ever gathered onto one portable Christian study tool. An extraordinary collection of Puritan, Protestant, Calvinistic, Presbyterian, Covenanter, and Reformed Baptist resources. It's fully upgradable and it's small enough to fit in your pocket. The Puritan Hard Drive combines an embedded database containing many millions of records with the most amazing and extraordinary custom Christian search and research software ever created. The Puritan Hard Drive has been produced to assist you in the fascinating and exhilarating spiritual, intellectual, familial, ecclesiastical, and societal adventure that is living the Christian life. It has been specifically designed so that you might more faithfully know, serve, and love the Lord Jesus Christ, as well as to help you to do all you can to bring glory to His great name. If you want to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, then the Puritan Hard Drive is for you. Visit PuritanDownloads.com today for much more information on the Puritan Hard Drive and to take advantage of all the free and discounted Reformation and Puritan books, MP3s, and videos that we offer at Stillwaters Revival Books.